This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free. Of the chains holding me.
Is anybody out there hearing me? Set me free.
Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here. Welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Status quo Christianity has failed. It's time to go rogue. That's the title, the subtitle of my book called The Rogue Christian. And you can find more out about that book at our website at theroguechristian.com. So last summer, I was contacted by a young man, Joel Barnes, and I interviewed him on the show. He had actually found us through theroguechristian.com and ordered a book. And then he even stepped forward on his own and offered to create the audio version of The Rogue Christian. So before I introduce Joel to talk about this, we're going to play a 5-minute clip of the audiobook. So let's get that going, and then we'll come back in a moment.
Those who live in the stream of grace care more about others than their own reputation. They know their shortcomings and brokenness. Rather than covering them up, they'll say, "I don't have the answers, but I'll walk with you on your journey. I'll be happy to listen to you, cry with you, and pray for you." Earlier in this chapter, we looked at those whose hearts had been wounded and speared with lies. If you're ready for freedom and healing, begin by asking the Lord to reveal any lies you've bought into. Talk it through with a good friend and ask them to pray for you. As the Holy Spirit reveals any lies, confess them as sin and renounce them, and ask your brother or sister to pray for your healing as we're told to do in James 5:16. Then ask the Lord to replace the lies you've renounced with the truth. If there are significant wounds the lies are attached to, there will be a process of healing involved, and you may want to seek the help of a Christian counselor. We can help you in this area. Living in grace is risky. You will cross legalists who get upset when you refuse to follow their rules. At some point, you'll stumble onto someone who has been spiritually abused by a church leader. God might call you to step in and say, "Hey, this is wrong. You're hurting them." You'll encounter proud head Christians who can talk doctrine, but don't understand the language of the heart. As we saw in chapter 5, Why We've Lost Our Salt, you might have to face an arrogant pastor who insists that their way is the only way. Jesus spent a lot of time confronting the Pharisees, so you're in good company if God puts you in this position. Don't back down if he does. Boldly speak the truth in love, and leave the results up to him. Colorado whitewater rafting trips are a blast. They can also be dangerous. Category 5 whitewater rafting trips ratchet up the danger level to life-threatening. Only those who are in top shape physically and have years of experience would dare to sign up, or be allowed to participate. The average person might start with a Category 2 trip. I've taken a Category 3 whitewater rafting trip in Colorado that tossed two of us, including me, into the river. Colorado river currents run at an average stream flow of 22,500 square cubic feet per second. If you're dumped in the river and aren't careful, you can wedge your ankle between several rocks in the riverbed and risk snapping your leg or being whisked into a large boulder. That's the Christian life. There are many who are content studying it on the riverbank. They attend church, have been to plenty of Bible studies, and have accumulated a wealth of knowledge, but they prefer the safety of the shore. They avoid the risk-taking that the action steps of faith require, and have little to no fruit or adventure in their lives. Then there are those who, in spite of their fear, get in the raft. Jesus, their guide, grins as they get in, and off they go into the rapids. They descend into a canyon where vertical granite walls tower 1,000 feet above them. Several eagles fly overhead. They're running in what is called big water, large volume, fast current, and big waves. They and their team spend the next 20 minutes navigating through a minefield of boulders. After the cartwheel around a large rock, their guide cries out for deep paddle strokes. Dig, dig, dig! They fly through a chute while angling for the narrow slot between two large rocks 10 feet in front of them, and make it through. Then their raft plummets down a harrowing 6-foot drop. As they hit the bottom, white river spray douses them and their teammates. They break through the canyon and ease into a valley surrounded by evergreen-covered mountains with icy crowns. The current slows, and all is quiet. They can rest. There's a bighorn sheep up to the left. One of their teammates spots an elk in the distance. Unshackled from the rule book of religion, we trust and follow the guide who loves us. We have no idea what we're doing or where he's taking us. But that's okay. There's no other way to live the Christian life.
Joel Barnes, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much for having me, Mike. And I just want to say I'm really glad that I found you and your book. Just being able to hear that clip again reminds me how much I appreciated what I read in it.
Well, and you did a fantastic job. That was a lot of work to read all that, so thank you. So,
my pleasure.
What is it that hits you to want to put the real Christian?
Yeah. Well, to start off with, for those who haven't heard the first couple of episodes that I was on earlier this year, I talk a little bit about it there too. But I kind of found it, I think, because God pushed me to it. There was a point I hit earlier this year where I was frustrated with a lot of the things happening in the church. I was frustrated how focused people seemed to be on trying to put me in a specific box. Obviously, there are important theological issues to discuss regarding the Bible, but I didn't want to be pigeonholed and assumed that I believed a particular way just because I had a title along with it. I wanted to be called a Christian, and I jokingly told a friend, I'm a rogue Christian now, that's my denomination. And then like 5 minutes later, I thought to myself, I wonder if there's like a book or a resource or anything that if someone has had that same thought. And sure enough, I looked it up, found your book, decided to order it, and really, really was struck by a lot of the things that you talked about. And Mike, you're not the first person to bring up some of these concerns with the church and the way that the specifically the American church works, but I think you really did a good job of tackling a lot of issues and how they all cooperate with each other. Some people have written books about lust in the church. Some people have written about spiritual abuse, but I think you covered a lot of things in a breadth that feels actionable and connectable, and seeing how different things, if done incorrectly, can cause problems in the church wide and far, and if done correctly, can deal with a lot of issues. Some of the really big ones that stood out to me were talking about issues that are relevant to what's going on. So if 50 plus, and I know the number's a lot higher than that, but let's say hypothetically 50 plus percent members of a church struggle with pornography, should probably be something that we talk about at least on occasion and not shy away from. And prayer is another really big one. I think that we maybe sometimes will pray at the start or end of a sermon. Usually the pastor is the one doing it. Doing it as a congregation isn't nearly as common, where it is one of, if not the most important thing discussed through the book of Acts and several of Paul's letters, is praying together as a body. And there's so many positive benefits that come from it. You get closer to your church community. You get closer to God. You start realizing how to deal with certain issues. And then, of course, the actual power of prayer to instill things in you. Those are just some of the things that really stood out about the book.
Mm. So in the churches that you've attended, has there been much in the way of prayer meetings?
The one that I'm going to now, I think, has a better handle on it than some of the ones I've been to in the past.
And what does that look like?
So the pastor prays near the end of a service, but specifically calls out prayer requests that different members of the church body have had. After the service, there is a table set up where people can go and specifically make prayer requests and pray alongside someone. There are also several church community groups that meet throughout the week and kind of create miniature churches within the larger church body, and those contain prayer as well. It just seems like a more common thing to be asked to. If you bring up something with someone in the church that you're struggling with, they say, "Can we pray about it?" Which just, it's just the slightest difference from what I'm used to hearing. I'm very used to people saying, "I'll be praying for you." And you kind of wonder in the back of your mind if they're actually going to pray for you or if they're going to forget. And you're not doing it together, which I think there is something important about praying individually for other people and yourself. There's something that comes about from that, having that alone time with God. But I also think it's important to pray as a church body too. And I didn't see as much of that in my past, but I'm seeing it now at this church.
Yeah, what always hit me about Acts is they began with 7 days straight of prayer meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wonder, why aren't we doing that, especially right now when we need it so badly?
Absolutely agree. It's countercultural. It's not the norm of the American church. So why would you do it? Because the Bible says to do it.
Right. So you emailed me recently about what you called a bit of a surreal moment. Mm-hmm. Share about that.
So as I shared a little bit about in the last couple of interview sessions that we had, the previous major church that I attended, the church where I met a significant number of young adult friends, where I was baptized, this is the pastor that I had both growing up as a little kid. There was a gap in between where I attended a different church but eventually returned to. He spoke to a lot of things that I heard sermons on in my adult life. And it was kind of crazy, but he was caught having affairs with women in the church, some of which I knew, and it was very, very impactful to me. Just about a week ago, the trial process has finished. I had a bit of an urge that I now look back and think God was prompting me to do this, but I hadn't looked up any information on it in a while. He was originally accused almost 3 years ago now. And I happened to look it up. And the very day I looked it up was the day that he had his final trial and was found guilty of most of the counts that were accused of him, which I had a suspicion was going to happen. But still, to have it written in stone, he's going to prison now. It's a lot to take in.
Is this something he did with a minor?
So there was one lady that was in her 20s who was married, and I probably won't give tons of detail just to protect the identities of the victims. But then there was another young lady that was actually invited into his home at the age of 17. Now, my understanding is that the conclusion was that she was 18 when these things began. I don't know if I believe it, and I don't think it suddenly stops being spiritual abuse the day that she turned 18. I think he still very much overstepped. He was married. He was 3-4 times her age, and was clearly using both his power within the church and the fact that she was in the home with their family as a tactic to be spiritually and sexually abusive.
So what was he, around 60?
Yeah, originally when he was convicted. And my understanding, and this is actually very relevant, this began about 5 years ago. It's a little unclear the extent of what happened prior to that. He was the pastor of that church for 20-plus years. And it seems like it wasn't until the very last 3 or so years that some of this stuff happened. And I've begun connecting some dots and realizing that there were several things that happened that he talked about, as well as some things that happened to me that all kind of become clearer now, understanding exactly when some of this was taking place.
And so how has this impacting you, knowing that a spiritual leader who spoke into your life did this?
I think the gut instinct for a lot of people is to see everything he taught as tainted in some way, and it certainly would be easy to do so. I think the message that I felt following this was, of course, I felt betrayed, but I tried to hold on to the fact that if he spoke truth into my life, that truth belongs to God, not to him. Him making poor decisions and being abusive does not magically make everything that he said and did wrong. But I think it would be very easy for a lot of people to see it that way, especially for those who were maybe victims of what he did. I can't imagine how they're wrestling with their relationship with God, knowing that someone who spoke about God into their lives did that to them. And I really hope that they can separate their relationship with God and the church as well from what happened with him, though I'm not saying it would be an easy thing to do.
And so how have you dealt with all these things emotionally?
I think that's a hard question to answer, harder than I expected it to be. I thought everything was kind of closed, but seeing, again, having it kind of set in stone, like this happened, it's frustrating. It's hard to want to trust other church leaders, and it's not like this is a one-time thing. I have had this happen now twice at my own churches and an additional time in close circles with people who went to a church nearby me who I knew quite well. And as you lay out in the book, it's something that happens more often than we'd like to admit.
Are you aware with the story of the big blow up with Robert Morris?
I don't think so.
Okay. He was the pastor of the largest church in the U.S. in Texas. I think they had 100,000 congregants and different satellites. And it came out that years ago he had been doing any inappropriate things with a 12-year-old girl. And so he just basically stepped down and resigned. This all blew up several months ago. And so when something like that blows up, you know, at the head of the church, it is very painful and traumatic to everyone involved, and not just anybody involved, but those outside of it are watching like, oh my gosh, this is, I mean, like you said, it feels tainted.
And it also injures the church as a whole. I mean, for those who are maybe nominal Christians or even atheists that are kind of looking at the church from outward in, why would they look at that and say, oh, this is, you know, a one weird example, but the church isn't terrible? They're looking for an excuse to say, hey, look, they're just like the rest of us. They're maybe even worse.
Yeah, and the purpose of this discussion is not to bash. For anyone listening, it's to bring this to the light, that this is very painful, it's very traumatic. And some of what we do is we isolate our pastors. I've talked to pastors senior pastors who are terrified of telling their elder board of a struggle with pornography because they didn't want to get fired.
Right.
So we some of these guys we box into a corner and then expect them to figure it out and walk on water. But we need to bring the truth to the light, which is what we're doing now.
I actually want to touch on something kind of related to that, and it ties into something that you were asking me about when we were emailing back and forth. About 3 years ago now, I was baptized by this pastor in the church. Mm. And in close proximity to that, there were some things that happened that I look at now and see there was spiritual warfare taking place while all of this was going on, and it impacted the church. There was a special sermon that took place, and I can't remember if it was a couple weeks before or a couple weeks after my baptism, but it was in very close proximity. This was January of 2021. The pastor got up on stage, and he spoke about childhood trauma that he had gone through, how he had been abused by some members of his family, both physically and sexually. And it makes me wonder if perhaps that was a cry for help. I've had people in my circle say that he was preemptively preparing for the, people finding out about what he was doing and was hoping that he would maybe garner some sympathy with it. I can't claim to know his heart, but I don't think it was on accident that he chose to speak about it. The other major thing that was going on at the same time was that, and he talks about this regularly during his sermons, he had begun doing ministry to a witch coven that was in close proximity to our church, regularly visiting, talking to members of that community, and talking about how they were placing curses on him. And kind of the final thing, and this is the personal aspect of it. This is something that I previously didn't really feel comfortable talking about. I shared with some close friends of mine initially when it happened, and didn't really know what to do with it. But I knew that it was, spiritual in some way. And I now feel a little bit more comfortable talking about it because I believe that I belong to Christ and he protects me from things like that. But there was a point, again, in close proximity to this time frame, I think it was probably February or March following my baptism in 2021. I was traveling fairly regularly for work, and I was on a work trip in Wisconsin. I was staying at a hotel. And I had a dream. I was asleep in my bed in the hotel room, and I dreamt that I was riding around in some type of vehicle rescuing people from some type of natural disaster. This feels like something that, you know, my subconscious has framed before. I very much take a lot of I put a lot of importance in protecting and taking care of people, so it's not surprising that my subconscious, you know, weaved that. But the end of the dream came when I had to go to a location in this vehicle. I got out, and I walked through this cave opening, and it ended in a spiral staircase that went down and down and down very far into the earth. And when I arrived at the bottom of the steps, there was a figure standing there. It was a very attractive woman in scantily clad clothing, and she looked right at me, and she said, "I am going to destroy you and your friends, and I'm going to consume you and your friends." And I remember feeling terrified. There was a doorway, a giant doorway behind her. I remember waking up from my dream and immediately knowing that this was not just a normal dream, it was some type of spiritual attack. I remember feeling as though the person, the figure that had been standing there, had a name. She was called Agony. And I woke up from that dream, and as loud as I could, I yelled, "I belong to Jesus, you cannot have me." Mm. And I shared that in that same moment, I pulled out my phone and sent a message in our young adult group chat that was part of the church, laying out that same story, and was mostly not taken seriously, though there was one friend that said, Yeah, I feel like there's some type of spiritual warfare going on.
This is a big one here, man, with the pastor going, you know, to a coven. That doesn't sound right. We'll have to pick this up at some point because this is an important issue. But thank you, Joel. You did a great job with the audiobook.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming on again. And thank you, my friends. And we'll talk to you next time.
Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.